Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Jennifer Friedenbach, Executive Director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. Jennifer, I think we're doing pretty well here. Do you have some more time? We could keep going?
Sure.
Okay. Well, in New York City, we found up to 40% of the young homeless aged 18 to 24 were partly there due to gender issues, being lesbian, gay, or transgender. Should we presume that's a problem in San Francisco, and what is being done to address their needs?
In San Francisco, we definitely are a mecca in terms of folks coming here who are persecuted because of their LGBT status in other areas. And when they come, you know, they're often find that there's no resources here to help them or very little. And so we absolutely have that issue here in San Francisco of young people who, you know, they don't have the family or, you know, the support system in place to help them, you know, and young people really need that, especially nowadays. It's very difficult to live independently because of that rent income disparity and the amount of income that young people are going to be able to earn. It's very difficult to afford rent. So absolutely, that's an issue here.
Jennifer, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions as we compare the rights of the homeless in San Francisco to other cities. Please try to give me a few fast answers if you can, even yes or no if that works. Are you ready?
Sure.
Is it legal for a homeless family to sleep in a public place in San Francisco?
Yes. It's illegal.
It's illegal?
Yeah.
Okay, can't do it. Is there anywhere in San Francisco area where homeless people can legally pitch a tent to live in?
No, there's nowhere legally they can pitch a tent to live in.
Okay. Is it legal to sleep in a car or camper in San Francisco?
It is illegal.
Cannot do that either. So if I'm found sleeping in a car, the police officer will ask me to do something else.
Exactly.
Okay. Does San Francisco have public washrooms accessible to the homeless?
It has some, but very limited.
Do we know how many homeless people in San Francisco are found dead on the streets each winter?
We stopped doing the count several years ago. The City Department of Public Health decided to stop doing it for political reasons, but usually by word of mouth, we find at least 100.
Can a homeless person vote in state elections?
Yes.
Can the homeless vote in city elections?
Yes.
And final question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the San Francisco police if 10 is where officers protect the homeless and 1 is the homeless are generally harassed or even beaten by the police? Your rating of San Francisco police?
Probably around a 3 or 4.
Well, Jennifer, let's get back to more extended issues. I began by pointing out in these uncertain times anybody could lose their job. You've mentioned that it's mostly poor people. Are you seeing some middle-class people who are surprised that they just don't have any options now?
We see some. That is not going to be as typical. I mean, I think folks who, for example, folks who are middle-class but maybe had steady income but didn't come from a legacy of accumulated wealth, maybe they were the first one in their families to get a college degree or, you know, this kind of thing. And they really don't have a lot to fall back on. You know, middle class is kind of a mushy word. And so we're never really sure what that means. But certainly most people who are homeless are, you know, are work, what we would consider working class, folks who definitely spent most of their life working, but probably at lower wage jobs that don't have a lot of stability.
This homeless crisis in the U.S. all sounds a little crazy. California has a record number of empty houses. Most of them are ultimately owned, or at least the mortgage is guaranteed by the federal government agency like Fannie Mae. And we have crowds of people with kids out on the street while thousands of homes sit empty. Do you think America will figure out a solution to that?
I think we absolutely can. I think that with political will and with the commitment at the federal level, we could solve this housing crisis relatively quickly. We could have even done it with 30 days of Iraq war spending, for example. We could have housed every man, woman, and child through the rest of their lifetimes just with the amount of money we spent in 30 days. So it really is a matter of political will. And I think for the United States, it's an incredibly important issue that we make sure all of our people are housed.
Well, that leads to the question, why do we tolerate homelessness?
You know, our political system really, you know, has favored greed. And we have a situation where, you know, in the United States, greed rules in so many different ways. And we really need to change that around, where we come from a place of human rights. We come from a place of dignity and mutual respect for all human beings.
Well, back on working with the homeless, what are your priorities for the coming winter for the people in San Francisco?
for us, we're working on identifying empty buildings. We're going to try to, you know, hopefully get them turned over to families and other homeless people. Certainly our priorities is we're trying to get another shelter opened up. We are also working hard to make sure that the civil and human rights of people who are forced to remain on the streets are upheld.
Please give us your website address and tell us how we can help.
So you can get a hold of us through cohsf.org. So that's the initials for Coalition on Homelessness, sanfrancisco.org, and that's our website. And folks can help. Certainly, if you're local to San Francisco, you can get involved in our struggle. We are supported totally by individual donations, very small foundation support, and folks can subscribe to our newspaper, The Street Sheet, and get it mailed to them. They can also give us donations online.
Is there anything I missed? Something else you'd like to add?
Just that I think that one of the things for folks to think about, and I know listeners are, you know, really disturbed by this idea of becoming homeless themselves or other folks becoming homeless. And I think, you know, we have to move from a sympathetic apathy state to a very active state. And folks can do all kinds of stuff to help. And it's really important to do that, you know, whether it's passing out socks to people or getting involved in a local struggle to create a housing bond that will house low-income people. But these are all things that people can get involved in by doing just, you know, a few hours a week to a whole lot more.
Our guest is Jennifer Friedenbach, and she's the executive director of the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Our next stop in the Radio EcoShock survey of homelessness in America is the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., in a city of 600,000 people, stuffed with lobbyists, lawmakers, and limousines. The number of homeless people in the District of Columbia has gone up 10% since the economic downturn in 2007. Michael Farrell is the executive director of the district's Coalition for the Homeless. Michael, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi, thank you.
Well, as we speak, Occupy DC continues along with a series of planned national protests in the Capitol. Do you think there's a connection to the problem of homelessness?
Well, certainly there are some issues that cross over into the whole Occupy Wall Street piece. But I think fundamentally the principal difference is we're talking about persons who were once employed, who are now unemployed, who are seeking opportunities, in addition to recent college graduates who have either not been able to secure employment or have had employment off and on. And the individuals who were homeless and still are homeless prior to this, while they are unemployed, they have other issues, which may include alcohol and substance abuse and mental health issues.
Right. So there's some crossover, but the problem of homelessness has been with us for a while.
Exactly.
I want to talk about numbers here for a second. During the big snow dump in January 2011, there was an annual Point of Time survey, and it found almost 12,000 people in shelters and around the town spread over the place without an official home. And yet the official numbers of homeless people for D.C. hover around 6,500. Why the big difference?
The number for the region, the Washington, D.C. region, exactly was 11,988, which represented approximately a 2% increase over the count that was reported in 2010. When you look at the District of Columbia for the same period, the numbers were also basically in that same range. For 2010, the number was 6,539 compared to 6,546. In 2011, so there was no material difference in the count for those 2 years. So when you look at homelessness overall in D.C. and Washington metropolitan region, it has been fairly stable. We've seen some minor fluctuations in the 1% to 2% range, plus or minus.
So it seems like the sort of lack of jobs and the economy haven't made a big change in the last few years anyway. Is that what you're saying?
Not directly. Where we're seeing the change is on how homelessness is affecting families with children. this particular area, we have seen an increase, and let me try to clarify that. While the overall numbers have remained basically flat for the region, the homeless count for single adults declined. On the other hand, the homeless count for persons in families increased. And we certainly see that directly tied to the poor economy. With respect to the single adults, there are two variables that really had a very pressing impact on how homelessness affected single adults. And that is the federal stimulus dollars, which provided dollars for permanent supportive housing. So individuals who are chronically homeless had a resource that could be used to house them and place them out of shelter into some form of permanent supportive housing. And permanent supportive housing is housing that provides supportive social services. The other aspect of stimulus dollars also provided funds for prevention. And so that also was beneficial to some single adults, as well as rapid rehousing. And those funds were used for individuals who became homeless and were able to rehouse them more quickly than if the funds were not readily available.
Are you going to be able to keep that federal funding?
The federal funding is running out, and that varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction in the region, but it's pretty safe to say that by mid-2012, those funds will be completely exhausted.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with Michael Farrell, Executive Director of the District of Columbia Coalition on Homelessness. Mike, I've been asking a few quick questions to compare the rights of homeless people in different cities. Please try to give me some fast answers if you can, even yes or no, if that works. Are you ready?
Sure.
Is it legal in Washington for a homeless person to sit on the sidewalk during the daytime?
Yes.
Is it legal for a homeless family to sleep in a public place?
No.
Is there anywhere in the Washington area where homeless people can legally pitch a tent to live in?
No.
Is it legal to sleep in a car or camper in Washington, D.C.?
Camper, yes. Car, no.
Does the district have public washrooms accessible to the homeless?
Some.
Would you say enough?
No, I'd say there are some public wash place facilities available in the district. They're few, but there are some.
Okay. Are homeless people in Washington found dead on the streets during the winter?
On a year-by-year basis, unfortunately, there are individuals who do die due to exposure or hypothermia. I can't quote the exact number from last year, but it usually has averaged somewhere in roughly between 2 to 4 individuals might die from hypothermia-related issues.
Can a homeless person vote in federal elections and municipal elections?
In the district, yes.
Okay. Can convicted felons vote in elections in Washington?
No.
And last one, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate Washington police if 10 is where officers protect the homeless and 1 is where the homeless are generally harassed or even beaten by police? How would you rate the D.C. police?
5.
Okay, right in the middle there. From Washington, D.C., my guest is Michael Farrell. I've just heard D.C. plans to teach homeless people the skills to fix up some of the city's abandoned property. In exchange, the volunteers get to live there for 2 years. That seems to make sense. Is it a good program?
I think it is an excellent program. It represents an opportunity for persons who are homeless or low income, the opportunity to become homeowners. And certainly the fact that they are actively involved in renovating that housing in order to prepare it for them to live in is certainly an appropriate and good idea.
And they pick up some construction skills along the way.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, Washington has temporary assistance for needy families, also known as TANF, and I found one report that showed 99% of people receiving that benefit are African Americans. So couldn't you talk to us about African Americans and homelessness in the nation's capital?
Well, in the nation's capital, unfortunately, the majority of the persons who experience homelessness are African American, and that's hovering around 91%. And consider that the district now is about 50% African American, there clearly is a disproportionate number of African Americans in the district who are experiencing homelessness relative to the overall population.
And, you know, people tend to think of homeless people as chronic substance abusers. There are some, but I found one survey in D.C. showing there are three times more folks in shelters with chronic health problems. And it leads me to wonder, is homelessness disguising the lack of medical care for poor people in America?
Well, I think it bears further examination because there are individuals who have multiple issues that may include a chronic health problem, could also include a chronic drug and or alcohol problem or some mental health problems. And so it really is bears, you know, further examination to kind of tease out which came first and which is, you know, really the more pressing issue. When you look at drug and alcohol abuse, you know, as a primary cause for a person's healthcare issues, it takes on a slightly different dimension versus, you know, someone who, and not to marginalize it, has a heart condition or HIV/AIDS or high blood pressure or diabetes. All of these things can be found certainly in the general population.
Well, if I head into a D.C. shelter and I'm obviously pretty sick, am I going to get to go to a hospital or see a doctor?
Certainly, if an individual requires emergency care, then ambulance, you know, will be called and the person would receive appropriate medical attention. In a non-emergency situation, the district has what they call the DC Healthcare Alliance, and persons who are homeless and low income have access to health care, you know, through the DC Healthcare Alliance. Now, the question becomes, do the individuals opt to avail themselves of those resources? And that varies on a case-by-case basis.
Michael, what are your priorities for the coming winter for people in DC who need homeless services?
Well, the primary priority for the winter and our winter season in the district begins November 1st and running through March 31st of next year is to make sure that there is adequate shelter available for anyone who needs it. For those individuals who choose not to go into shelter, the district has a hypothermia alert plan that will send vans out around the streets to identify persons who are homeless and who choose to stay on the streets, to provide them with blankets and coffee and tea and hot soup in order to help them to sustain themselves if they choose to remain on the streets. The hypothermia hotline number is generally available to the public so that they can make calls for individuals who may be in distress on the street, and if citizens use that number, a van will be dispatched to that location to check on the status of the individuals homeless and on the streets.
As we wrap up, can you give us your website address and tell how DC listeners can help?
Our website address is www.dcfhouse.org. And people can certainly help by making contributions, donating their time, and also since we're on the verge of the winter season in particular, you know, donating warm clothing items, coats and hats and gloves and boots and socks and things of that nature.
Our guest is Michael Farrell from the Coalition for the Homeless. Thank you so much, Michael.
Well, thank you. Have a great day.
I'm Alex Smith reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Radio EcoShock.
Good evening. Our top story tonight, Vancouver's battle with homelessness has been won. After years of struggling with increasing rates of homelessness, tonight Vancouver will finally house its last homeless person, making it a model for cities around the world.
From Vancouver, we're honored to welcome a longstanding advocate for the poor. Jean Swanson is the coordinator of the Carnegie Community Action Project. She helps people of the downtown East Side, one of the poorest neighborhoods in the country. An award-winning organizer, Jean Swanson is author of the book Poor Bashing, The Politics of Exclusion. Jean, welcome to Radio EcoShock. Jean, we're taking a quick sort of multi-city reading of the homeless situation. I understand there's finally a bit of good news for the homeless in Vancouver. The mayor, Gregor Robertson, just announced the count of homeless people actually on the street has gone down from 800 last year to about 145 this year. Can you tell us some of the positive developments that other cities might learn from?
Well, I just want to make a small correction there. Homelessness actually went up in the latest count. It's just that the number of homeless people who are in shelters as opposed to the number on the street went up. So more people are in shelters now than before. So that's a positive thing. It's a sort of positive thing. Another sort of positive thing is that in Canada, you don't have to have kids to get welfare. So people in Canada can get welfare, and they can, if they have disabilities, they can get a disability pension. So they do have a little bit of money to pay for rent, but it's only $375, and there's virtually no place available for $375 for the rent of $375. So it's really hard, but it's at least better than it is in the States in that way. And since the mayor has come in, he's been working on opening more shelters. But the bad news side is we just learned that the province isn't going to fund 160 shelter beds that they did fund last year.
So we're winning and losing, but there have been some supportive housing spots being built in the city?
Well, you got to take the long-term look at it. Back in the 80s, we had a national housing program, and the feds put money into housing, which they're virtually not doing now. So back in the 80s, there were about 600 units of social housing a year that got built in Vancouver. A recent survey found that between 2005 and 2010, there were only about 250 net new social housing units in the whole province, 250 over 5 years. So the amount of new housing that's being built is minuscule. We do have 14 sites that the community, our community in the downtown east side, fought for, that the city bought and the province is funding. They were supposed to be built by the end of 2010, but two of them haven't even been started yet. So, and three of them in the downtown east side, I think three or four, opened this year. So there are more social housing units opening this year than have opened in previous years. However, the city is also encouraging property owners to upgrade SRO hotels, which is kind of the last resort for homelessness. And the number of rooms that we've counted where landlords are upscaling them and pushing rent beyond what people on welfare and disability and seniors on pension can afford is actually higher than the number of new units that have opened.
Well, I've been asking a few quick questions as we compare the rights of homeless people in different cities. So on these ones, if you could give me fast answers, even yes or no, if it works. Is it legal in Vancouver for a homeless person to sit on the sidewalk during the daytime?
I think so, so long as they're not in certain places, like within 6 meters of an ATM or things like that.
Is it legal for a homeless family to sleep in a public place?
I think if there was a homeless family with children, that their children would be apprehended immediately. And businesses hire security guards to move sleeping homeless people off the sidewalks.
Okay. Is there anywhere in the greater Vancouver area where homeless people can legally pitch a tent to live in?
Not that I know of.
Is it legal to sleep in a car or camper in Vancouver?
I think so, but I'm not positive.
Does Vancouver have public washrooms accessible to the homeless?
A very, very few.
Are homeless people in Vancouver found dead on the streets each winter?
Yes. Well, I think there were at least two last year.
And can a homeless person vote in elections?
Yes, if they can go through all the hoops and rigmarole that's required to get on the voters list.
Right.
But it is technically possible.
And the final question, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate Vancouver police if 10 is where officers protect the homeless and 1 is the homeless are generally harassed or even beaten by police? Your rating of the Vancouver Police Department?
Probably a 2 or a 3.
Well, yes, because we had the missing women's inquiry and so many things where people went missing and were murdered and the police didn't act on it. We've just got an inquiry in that now. Well, Gene, we've talked about some of the wins for homeless people in Vancouver, such as they are. What are some of the things that still need to be done?
Well, a big thing is that's happening in downtown Eastside is gentrification. So the city is encouraging more developers to build condos. The condos push up land values. It pushes up the whole rents in the hotels. It pushes up the taxes in the businesses that serve low-income people, and low-income people are pushed out, or the community that they feel comfortable in is totally changed. So gentrification is big, and we're working really hard to stop it in the downtown east side, at least until we can get social housing for everyone who lives there that they can afford. Another thing is we desperately need federal and provincial governments to put in money to build social housing, and we desperately need the city to buy lots, which is their role, to put the social housing on. They have a policy of buying one lot a year in the downtown east side, and they haven't bought any for 3 years. So the policy, we're trying to work to get them to stick to their own policy, and the Downtown Eastside Neighborhood Council and Carnegie Action Project have a campaign to get the city to buy 10 sites a year for the next 5 years so they can replace the SRO hotels, which are completely inadequate, bedbug-ridden, no bathroom, no kitchen, tiny 10-by-10 rooms that no one should be forced to live in.
What is an SRO? What does that stand for?
Single room occupancy. It's a room in a hotel, but it's a residential hotel and people pay by the month. And they have to share a bathroom with everyone on their floor, and they don't have kitchens. And the condition, they're often very poorly managed and unsafe, but they're better than the street.
Can you give us your organization website and tell us how people could help?
The website is capvancouver.wordpress.com. Write to the mayor and council and tell them they should be buying 10 sites a year for the next 5 years to replace the SROs. And they should be lobbying federal government and provincial government fiercely to put money into social housing that people on welfare can afford, and that they should stop gentrification in the downtown east side until people who live there now have the housing that they need.
I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock. We've been talking with the well-known anti-poverty organizer, Gene Swanson. Thank you so much, Gene.
You're welcome.